Krista Lewis and Ron Canole together, Beauty for Ashes. And before that, from Rob and Mark, Line of Judah. You are the Lion of Judah. 13 and a half minutes now after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and believe it or else, Dr. Don has joined us on a Tuesday. I know this is not our habit, but we're glad to have him. Don, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's good to be here. Sorry I couldn't make it yesterday, but there are things going on.
There were, and I should mention Dr. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board at creationmoments.com, and he joins us typically on Monday mornings, and we talk about creation and science and faith and evolution and stuff like that, young Earth, old Earth. We get into all those things, but today we thought we'd get to something really basic and kind of came up in our conversation with him last week. Life. Now, I mentioned to you last week that I remember my biology class in high school, and one of the first things we learned was a definition of life, and it seems, now I can't remember it word for word, but there were four or five characteristics of an organism that had to be there in order to consider it alive. And you've passed along a definition to us that's over at Wikipedia. In fact, we'll have that link on our archive of this conversation later today. It doesn't mention the same things. What's current thinking on life? How would you define life?
Well, yeah, that's a, you know, we say, well, life, it's simple. The definition is even simple. Well, you know, the man has struggled with this for eons, and they finally have come up with what they think is a decent definition. And one is that, well, life consists of organisms, you know, for example, that exhibit all or most of the following.
All or most, an equivocation there, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Homeostasis means that things on the inside of the cell, for example, are constant. They aren't varying the electrolyte concentration, the salt concentration. Mm-hmm. Inside the cell is maintained. Certain chemicals inside the cell are maintained. Energy components are maintained. That's what homeostasis means.
Kind of a sealed unit idea then.
Right.
Separate from its environment, yeah.
And for us, for example, as humans, you go outside and it's a real hot day, then you're going to be, begin to sweat. And the whole, you know, one of the purposes of sweat is to maintain our temperature, because if we get too hot, that's not good for our bodies. So that's what homeostasis is. It's a process by which we try to maintain temperatures or salt concentrations or fluid concentrations.
Kind of a steady state then, conducive to life, is what it has to maintain it on its own.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. And there's all kinds of feedback mechanisms, you know, related to this. So nothing is, nothing is really simple. Just take, for example, sweating. I mean, you have to have nerve receptors, excuse me, that can sense the temperature of the outside and, you know, tell your body to, start producing, you know, sweat. Mm-hmm. So none of this is a real simple, you know, process.
Does it require aspiration or breathing? Is breathing essential? I mean, we trade carbon dioxide for oxygen, and plants do the reverse. So both plants and animals do that. They exchange materials with the outside atmosphere. Is that a requirement? Or is that part of homeostasis?
That is a requirement. I mean, that's called metabolism. We use oxygen to metabolize various substances, for example. Sugar being the simplest thing that we can metabolize, and then oxygen is used to get the energy out of sugar and break it down into carbon dioxide, which we expire. So metabolism is a function that required for life. Another is organization. There has to be some organization. If there's no organization, what do you have? I mean, it's just chaos. It's just, you know, randomness. But everyone, I think, admits that cells and even, you know, something that one would say, well, normally this isn't life on its own, like a virus. A virus mm-hmm. particle, for example, is highly organized, but it's not respiring. There is no homeostasis. The particle itself is just sitting there waiting to, let's say, infect a host. But until it infects a host, then things don't start happening. So it's got to use the host's internal mechanism for making more virus particles.
So you're saying then virus is not life?
Not on its own.
Okay, so it has to have a parasitic host then. I mean, it is a parasite in essence, right? It lives off the living functions of its host.
Yes, that's correct. Mm. It takes over the it injects, basically what it does, it injects its RNA into the host, which then quickly manufactures the DNA and then gets incorporated into the whole mechanism of the cell. And now the cell has been redirected to manufacture more viral particles and instead of the machinery for the cell itself.
How does a virus compare to a bacteria?
Well, a bacteria has everything that it needs to function. Okay. It functions on its own. And take Escherichia coli or E. coli, which most people are familiar with. Even if you had elementary biology, you know about E. coli. And E. coli is pretty interesting because its DNA is actually circular, and so it's double stranded. The information is packed so tightly in Escherichia coli to make the function of the cell that it can actually transcribe in both directions. So it can take the information on one strand of DNA, for example, and then take the information from the other strand and make two different proteins, for example. So it's pretty interesting. But we need this, we need organization, and we need metabolism. Obviously, another function of life is that we need growth. If we normally say that if something's not growing, then, well, gee, it's on the verge of dying. And we've seen, I'm not, a child growing up to an adult is one thing. And then as we get to be an adult, we would say, well, we have stopped growing. But in actual fact, we have not stopped growing because, our bones continue to grow slowly and other things continue to grow.
I can tell by the number of notches in my belt when I get
out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can, but that type of growth, we generally don't appreciate. Mm.
I've been growing hair in my ears that I never grew before.
Yeah. Well, take heart, you're alive, mm-hmm. Contrary to popular opinion, you're doing fine.
But we do, so there must be a constant anabolism, for example, and then catabolism, that is building up of material, tearing down of materials that needs to continuously be going on. Now, another element that is in this Wikipedia article is called adaptation. And if you take this a little too far, then obviously you're going to get into the realm of, well, we've adapted so much that, a single-celled organism, for example, has now turned into man. Of course, I don't take adaptation, that that broadly, but the evolutionists do. And so we need to define that a little bit better.
I think it's interesting that the article made the assumption that life was 3.5 billion years old and had evolved. I mean, that was at the very beginning of the article, as if it was just taken for granted. That's the natural course of things. That's not the case.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like Well, here's our premise, and then we're gonna jump from there. Mm-hmm.
We'll start with a huge assumption and then proceed.
Right, and that's where, you know, obviously we differ. I mean, I differ, you know, from this article, because life started a little over 6,000 plus or minus years ago here on Earth. But God gave us the ability to some degree to adapt, and certainly we have a tremendous variation within a kind of animal. So, but in Genesis, you know, God said repeatedly, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And he made these various kinds. So, you know, he made the dog kind, he made the cat kind, he made, you know, humankind, for example, us. And there's tremendous variability between, you know, us humans. That you know, it makes life interesting because we all don't look exactly the same.
You know, I'm a baseball fan, and I watch a lot of baseball games over the course of the summer. And one of my delights is when the camera pans the stands and you see thousands of faces, none of which you've ever seen before. And it just awes me. You know, you could say, well, he looks kind of like so-and-so that I know, and that, but never quite the same. I mean, just the variety in faces is astounding to me. The creativity behind that, yep, is just amazing.
So that is really awesome, because to create an organism, for example, a human, you could say the same thing about dogs, but I think we're more attuned to it because we're looking, you know, we're looking at our kind, and we're saying, my goodness, there's an awful lot of variation. But God built in stasis. In other words, we are not going to change from a human to something else, you know, a higher form with pointy heads, for example, or with shorter arms because we're no longer using them, or no legs because we're not using them. We have cars and everything, and we get from, you know, one place to the next, and we're always sitting down for the most part, unless you farm the earth. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, I don't see people's legs shrinking. And of course, the evolutionists would tell you, well, there just hasn't been enough time yet for that to happen. But anyway, it's, you know, we've got to be a little careful with this word adaptation. I think they threw it in there just to point to evolution, as opposed to this is variation within a kind.
There seems to be kind of an undercurrent there that's selling evolution to us too, which rubbed me the wrong way with the article. Although I appreciate the detail. One of the requirements they made for life is that the definition be broad enough to include extraterrestrial life. In other words, life out in the cosmos someplace, if it's ever discovered, would have to meet these same requirements. So the requirements have to be broad enough to encompass that. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it makes sense that they would certainly do that. Now, whether or not all of these definitions would apply, and I'm not necessarily saying that all of these definitions are absolutely necessary. Like I said, the term adaptation, what is adaptation? Well, if it's cold outside, like it is this morning here in Texas, I will put on a long sleeve shirt, and I might even put on a vest or something, or a jacket, and I have adapted to the temperature outside. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's adaptation, but nothing in biology has changed other than what's going on internally to try to maintain that's the homeostasis again, my internal temperature.
Here's a question for you. Are spirits alive? Well, that doesn't meet the definition of life as far as we know, does it?
And that's where I disagree wholeheartedly, because they have seven items here on their list for the definition of life. But in my opinion, and from a theological point of view, the spirit is the most important element of life. And I'll give you some examples. Genesis 2, it defines how God made Adam and Eve a little more clearly and a little more personable than the general description that's given in Genesis 1. And in Genesis 2, it says that God formed Adam from the dust of the earth, and he breathed his life into his nostrils. So, you know, what was that with which God breathed into him, if it was not, you know, his own spirit, right? Mm-hmm. If it was a spirit that actually caused Adam to come to life. So he had all of the elements. He had all the biology, but he was not alive until God breathed his spirit into him. So let's take this a little bit further, you know, in Scripture. And we have this story in the New Testament. It's not a story. It's just, you know, recording of history. You have Ananias and Sapphira. And Ananias comes to Peter, as you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter asks him.
Church in Jerusalem here, yeah.
Peter asks him, is this what you sold your field for? And Ananias said, yeah, this is what I sold the field for. And Peter, through the Holy Spirit, knew that he was lying. And, you know, basically his spirit was taken from him. Ananias' spirit was taken from him that moment when he lied. And, you know, they carried him out. There was nothing wrong with his biology. But because his spirit, God took his spirit, his body then died. Sapphira comes in, you know, as they were taking out her husband. She says the same thing. And, of course, she, you know, dies as well. So the spirit is essential.
This is an interesting point then, because a lot of folks who even believe in spirit or soul will tell you that once you die, the spirit departs. What we're saying is death is brought on by the departure of the spirit.
Right, exactly. And then I'll give you one more example, which is quite familiar to everyone, and that is Jesus on the cross. Now, Jesus's body, you know, being pierced, being, you know, the crown of thorns, the lashes on his back, he was quite dehydrated. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of blood left in him. But yet he was alive until the point where he gave up, it says he gave up the ghost or gave up his spirit. So Jesus was the only person, God-man, man-God, who was able to give up his own spirit. And his body didn't collapse until his spirit left his body, that he actually, his spirit, you know, he gave it up, and then, you know, then he died.
Is spirit, in your opinion, a separate category of energy or existence? How does it differ from, say, pure energy, or is it the same?
Oh, no, it's not the same. there obviously is some energy factor to it, you know, because we have all the angels, for example, and Satan and all his cronies that, you know, they're spirits. And so, but it's organized intelligence. It's, you know, an angel is a being, and our spirits are being, you know, in Jeremiah, it says, God is telling Jeremiah, before you were formed in your mother's womb, I knew you. So, you know, our spirits, that suggests that our spirits were around and God knows our spirits before we were even formed in the physical form.
And that's kind of leading me to the next question. When a baby is born, the child receives a spirit at some point there. I'm not sure whether at conception or, you know, I don't know how that works, what the timing is. But is that a new spirit, or is that a spirit that's been around forever, or is it that God has planned for the existence of this child since the beginning and kind of a reserved spirit? Are our spirits separate, or is a spirit all part of one, I don't know what to call it, one mass, a unit of some kind?
yeah, we don't want to get into, you know, to, into some pagan religion or something.
No,
like pantheism.
Well, no,
but one, you know, that could lead you down the road to pantheism or reincarnation, for example. Mm-hmm. Once you lose your body, then you got to find another one to inhabit. And, you know, the demon possession is kind of like that.
Well, you know, but, I'm asking you for speculation here to some degree. And if you have no biblical evidence, by all means, let me know. But where does this child spirit come from? It comes from God, but did it pre-exist or is it a new spirit? And this leads me to another question, which is related. You know, this is another whole subject. And I want to, but the end of the world, the end of you know, the new heaven, the new earth comes at what point? What's God's criterion? We can only guess. But apparently it's not if enough suffering has happened, if enough people have died, if enough time has gone by. It's like the requirement is something else. It has maybe something to do with the level of spiritual affinity with the Creator somehow. That maybe there's got to be a critical mass of spirit that is now in the kingdom that says to him that now's the time.
Right.
This is kind of really far out there, but help me.
Well, I don't think it's that far out. Well, let's go back to the baby analogy, or to the you know, the embryo. You know, most of us believe that you know, believe in the Lord, believe that life begins at conception. So the sperm by itself, or the egg by itself, is not life. It has the potential for life, but once those two, you know, meet and the DNA is now mixed up, and now you've got a full complement of DNA, life begins. Now,
from what you just said, if life ends with the departure of the spirit, life begins with the entrance or the introduction of the spirit. That suggests an outside force to introduce it. I mean it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So, at, you know, and you have this this
a gatekeeper.
You know, this incomplete definition, for example, of soul, and the incomplete definition of spirit, and we can talk about, you know, those two entities, but certainly at the point of conception, the soul has to be there, and you know, things start happening immediately, and whether or not the person's, you know, whole spirit is there, I have no idea. I can't even speculate about that. All I know is that now we have life, and that life is valuable, and you know, will turn into a full human being, left you know, undestroyed, let's put it that way, by the you know, by someone through an abortion or something like that.
Would you say that spirit imparts personality?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Our spirits do impart, you know, personality, because God, I believe that God has, you know, a particular role for each and every one of us, and part of our journey on life is to figure what that is. Who are we? What's our identity in Christ here on earth? And that is what glorifies, you know, God in the end, is that we become who God created us to be.
And one of the challenges is to discover the gift, the things
exactly
that about us that are unique and that we have a responsibility to use wisely.
Right. Yes. Now, going back to the other end, you know, the other end of the spectrum, which is when will God call this whole thing to a close? Well, Jesus told us, because the disciples asked him. And he, you know, the disciple says, okay, Jesus, when will this end? And, you know, when will you come again? When will all this end? And he said, when you see these things, you know, upon the earth, when you see
signs, indications,
the signs, yeah,
the new season, he equated it to the seasons,
right?
Yeah,
and so when you see these things, you know, the end is near, and I think one of the greatest criteria, you know, for Jesus' second coming, is that Every human being has had the opportunity to hear the gospel and has had an opportunity to respond to the gospel. And so when that actually takes place, then Jesus would say, okay, I have given, you know, these folks every opportunity to receive me.
Yeah, but see, new people keep coming into the world. It's like the work never ends around here.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it is possible. I mean, see, because you have to, if new people keep coming into the world, and they are, obviously, then we, you know, as Christians, continue to have a job.
Yeah, that's nice to be needed. Yeah, it is.
And if we just lay back and not do our job, then, you know, the end may go on for a long time.
David, you have work to do yet.
Well, I've told every time I find someone who will stand still and listen to me, who is under 30, I tell them, thank you for working and thank you for keeping your job. I mean, thank you for continuing to supply Social Security taxes, because without you, I'm lost.
A real diplomat for the baby boomers.
I'm doing what I can do.
I think it's a good move. Now, Don, this is fascinating. I'm sure we could go on forever and ever, and maybe we will, but we'll break it up into weekly discussions. But this is a great line of thought to pursue here, and it brings up as many questions as it answers. David, I see your frontal lobe swelling there. There's another idea.
Well, and it's almost like it's a question without an answer in this particular setting. And, you know, and I continue to look at all the facts and figures and descriptions of life and you know, pictures of children in the womb and all the rest of that, and scratch my head and look at people who believe that it's okay to yank the child out and kill it. Yeah, because it's, you know, it's not really murder, it's convenience. And, you know, that's, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, you know, like I said, it's a discussion that's been had zillions of times with all kinds of other people, but I still don't understand. Well, I mean, with this last election, I don't understand why people voted the way they did. So,
and if all life is precious, what you're talking about is setting priorities. One life having more value than another,
right?
And that has theological overtones to it, Dr. Don, doesn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
Human life differs from plant life, from other animals, and how? What's the difference in that? It must be in the quality of the Spirit imparted, because we've just said today that life begins with the introduction of Spirit. Does that apply to plants? Silly question.
Well, why don't we take that up maybe on another broadcast? Because I think, you know, the scripture, at least in my mind, Genesis 1 clearly outlines, I don't know about clearly, but certainly gives us a hint as to maybe that question.
Well, that'll be interesting. Let's pick that up next week. And I'm not sure what day of the week it's going to be. Are you available Monday, you think?
I am available Monday.
All right. Back to the regular niche then.
No more seminars to go to, at least for now.
Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board of creationmoments.com. And are you still blogging over there, Dr. Don?
Well, I haven't in a while because I've had all of these seminars to go to with regard to grape growing and wine making and the regulations on wineries and all of this other stuff. So I think that's halted for at least a little bit. And
are there other folks blogging there?
Well, Steve Schultz does some. Some blogging on Facebook as well as, I don't think he's on our website, but he's our editor and he keeps folks engaged questions.
That creationmoments.com is a terrific website, and you'd find it a great resource for your church as well. You can link to it from our website at brokenroadradio.com. It's creationmoments.com. And, of course, we have Ian Taylor's program, Creation Moments, several times a day here on Broken Road Radio. So, Don, as always, it's been a blessing. Thanks very much for joining us today, and we will check in with you Monday. We'll learn a little bit more about life. Maybe we'll get into that plant question. That intrigues me. In the meantime, take care, okay? Thank you.
Okay, very good.
See you, Don.
Music from Buddy Miller continues our Broken Road Radio Tuesday morning. Good morning to you.